So yesterday we noted that the indications in the Psukim are that the slavery in Egypt is not exactly what we think of in terms of slavery, right? You know, people were Jews were living in their own houses, they had a quota, but then seemed to have gone back at night, they had families, they seemed to even own some property, they seemed to have some free time, maybe it's because they were only lazy, but the point is, you look at it, and this does not seem like slavery as we know it, so that forces the Mefarshim to really think of what is going on, okay? So, yeah, we don't have so much time, so let me give you the summary. If you want to look through all the Makarot, I encourage you to actually read through. I managed to read through all the Makarot while holding. I think I switched off twins in the middle, right, because they have all the sources on it. You know, so you can actually read through the 30 pages worth of Makarot. Okay, so there is one Shita that basically, in the end of the day, says, look, I mean, maybe they lived at home, but in the end of the day, no, this was real, this was state slavery, right? They worked for the country in terrible conditions for the entirety of the slavery period. And that's, you know, much of what you find in the Midrashim, in the Mechilta that Rashi quotes, but it's also in some of the later Mefarshim, and probably what you're familiar with. Right, where they understand the pasuk of Vayasim Olav Sarei Misim as they demanded a labor tax. Now, right, the Midrashic tradition will tell you that it didn't start that way, right? First they told them to work for a little bit and they paid them, or everyone had a rotation, eventually it turned into slavery, but by the end it was, right, it was state slavery and they were building storehouses for the state and it was bad, right? It was really bad. And indication that it was like this bad, very intense state slavery is that Moshe has to get permission for them to leave for 3 days, right, from Paro. Right, it sounds very much like Paro was in charge. This is a, right, state-run slavery to the state, and therefore Paro needs to give permission. And you'll take indication from the later parts where, yes, originally they only had quotas, but by the end, Paro is giving them the quotas they can't meet, right? So you'll take that as showing that, you know, the quotas to begin with were, like, pushing them to their breaking point, and then once he didn't give them a stride, push them past their breaking point. But even before that, it was at the breaking point, right? If you want to look negative, right, that's the type of way you're going to read. You're going to read this. And then, you know, the way Rav David Zvi Hoffman, his spin on it is at the beginning, it was work for the sake of government needs, right? Pitom and Ramses. And then eventually, it just turned into slavery for the sake of slavery, right? In the Midrashic imagination, Pitom and Ramses are built on quicksand, right? And therefore, they just keep rebuilding the same ones, right? But again, it could be in stages. Again, if you want to really think of it in those terms, so then you'll read Befarech as meaning really back-breaking labor, right? Right? That would push you in that level. You'll find, or you'll go with the Midrashic tradition, which is Befarech means that they made men do women's jobs and women do men's jobs, right? To play with them psychologically, just to torture them. Or the Ksava Kabbalah says they kept changing professions so that they would never be comfortable with what they were doing. Right, so now, again, it's still not what we think of in terms of slavery in the South. They still seem to live at home somewhat, but you could get it pretty close to that. And again, if you want to do that, so you would give a lot of credence to phrases in the Chumash like, Vayimararu et chayehem ba'avodah kasha. It was very bitter. And you would say, oh, the Jews are the only ones who were oppressed. And again, yes, they still lived at home. So then how would you deal with the fact that they seem to have at some point had quotas and be allowed to go home? So again, maybe you'll say that they used to be pushed to their limit, then they were eventually pushed past their limit. How would you deal with the fact that the Jews seem to have freedom of movement? Well, the Midrashic solution is to say that's only Leviim, because Leviim didn't work, but everyone else doesn't have freedom of movement. Right, and doesn't have free time, right? Now, admittedly, even with all of this, they still seem to own property, right? So there still are limits. Now, even in this perspective, the genocide is still not the big deal here, right? Genocide, the infanticide still seems to be a short-lived thing. It's bad, and maybe it's indicative of how extreme Paro could be, right? And it'll shed light on how bad the slavery was. It's still not a big part of the story. Now, obviously, the more you go in this direction, so again, you still have to qualify it and say it's not what we know of slavery, right? They still owned property. They still had houses. You can't deny that in the psukim. Right? But you can come up with ways of saying they were really pushed their limit, they were working for no reason, really just to torment them. The infanticide just shows how extreme Paro could be, even if it's not long-lived. Right? And then, if you want to understand, so why is Paro punished so badly? The answer is, well, because the slavery was really, really, really that bad. And why is it necessary for them to get spoils at the end of the story? Because they really have to get paid back in some level. And that would be, one image, which would get it close, if not identical to what we, not identical to what we know of slavery, but a really bad state-sponsored slavery. Yes, Yeti. Correct! So it would be impressive that the Jews did. Yeah, sorry. No? Okay. Fine. Right, so it would be surprising. I mean, maybe at this point the Egyptians do own their land. I don't know. I mean, it's been hundreds of years since that. Fine, they have land. Okay, Enochanami. Right, Enochanami. Enochanami, correct. Okay. All the way to the other extreme is Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor, who really says, you know what, it sounds like this slavery is not as bad as we think of slavery. It really wasn't. I mean, there were bad parts to it, but it wasn't that bad. And he goes as far as saying that they didn't work most of the year. They didn't work most of the year. He says their slavery is the same as Shlomo's slavery, right? Shlomo, to build the Beit HaMikdash, set up a rotational obligation to the government, right? You worked, in the time of Shlomo, you worked for 1 month, and then you didn't work for two. So Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor said that's what happened. You want to know why it sounds like the Jews are living at home and they're moving around, they have freedom of movement? Yeah, because they did, right? They only worked, I don't know how much time, but a month on, a month off, a week on, a week off, a day on, a day off, I don't know. They didn't work all the time. The Jews as a whole were working all the time, but individual Jews had days off. And he says, were the Jews the only one working? He says, yes. But that's because he plays on the word Sarei Misim. Why is it called tax collectors? His answer is very simple. Egyptians paid money, and Jews paid in work. And therefore, it really was a tax. That's what it was. They paid, and they didn't even pay all the time. And that's why they have owned property, and that's why they have possessions, and that's why they go home, and that's why they could be moving around. Not because, Chazal, that Levi isn't working. Everybody is only working temporarily. They work 1 day a week, 2 days a week, 5 days a week, but they have days off, right? They have months off. I have no idea, right? Whatever the model is, he doesn't say, right? But like Shlomo, a month on, 2 months off, that's what it was. He even says that it's only the men. The women aren't working at all. It's the men working periodically. And that's why, what's his proof? Yocheved is paid by Bat Paro to nurse her child. Which means that the women are, right, that women are taking up employment, right? They're being paid for their work, right? Does that give you the image of coercive slavery all the time for every man, woman, and child? It doesn't. So he said, okay, so then Rosa Bechor Shor says, then how did this at all accomplish the goal that Paro had? So he says, look, maybe he just hoped that it would tire the people out, or maybe he just wanted to control them so they wouldn't join the enemies. And having them in some sort of system in the government is enough to control them. Right? But he doesn't need to, right? And if that's the case, that's why it seems to be that they have friends amongst the Egyptians, right, at the end, right, that they're asking for property because, well, they do. They have free time. You'll tell me, doesn't it say Vayimaru et Chayhem Farech? He said, yeah, there were times when it was really bad. And sometimes during the enslavement period, it was really bad. The problem for Yosef Bechor Shor is then why does Hashem punish Paro so badly? Right? Like it doesn't seem so bad. So here you'd have to say, well, either it's because when he did work them, it was cruel, or the infanticide is just an example of sort of Paro's periodic cruelty, which went beyond tax, you know, requirements. Or even that type of slavery is really wrong, right? And that's what you'll have to conclude. That's possibility too. But that's really the other extreme, which is that we think of it as really, really bad. The answer is not nearly as bad as you thought. Yes. Yes. Because he said it's clear that during some of the periods when they're working, right, there is cruelty. Right? No one's denying there was cruelty. It was bad. But that doesn't mean they were slaves all the time. That doesn't mean it was all as bad as you think. It was bad. There were parts of it were bad. Maybe that's the problem. But it wasn't all the time. I see them already over time. Okay, I'm still going to try to quickly finish. Okay? Again, you're going to have to justify why it's bad. Right? And why Paro is punished. Right? But that's a different model. Yes, yeah. You know, it's hard. I looked up Yosef Bechor Shor. I read it. It's not that much. He doesn't have that many psukim on. It's not like he builds the whole theory. It's what he indicates, right? And yes, this makes it hard to understand why Paro was punished so badly and why we constantly say you were slaves in Egypt if it wasn't so bad. On the other hand, what does it explain? Well, that other pshatim don't? Why the story happened the way it does, but also Lo Titayev Mitzri. Why later on does Hashem say, don't hate the Egyptian, Kiger Hayita Barto, because you lived in his land, right? I mean, everyone else has to bend over backwards and say, even though we were slaves, it still started out good, or something like that. For Yosef Bechor Shor, the answer is, there were parts that were bad, but like, it wasn't that bad, and that's why you owe a certain debt of gratitude to the Egyptians also. Yeah, yes, and it does a good job explaining that too. Okay, I'm really over time, so quickly the last one. Is there other Midrashic traditions who say it was a complicated slavery? There was state slavery, but there was also personal slavery, right? And that by the end, in the Midrashim, basically, originally, it was only they worked for the king, which wasn't so bad. But then Paro wanted to accelerate their subjugation, so eventually he said, "V'chol avodah v'asadeh," right? So there's this other Midrashic tradition. No, it started as slave slavery, but as it got worse, it turned state slavery, and he let every Egyptian basically grab a Jew for his private work. And in that sense, they really were singled out as Jews because it became this total enslavement. And in the Tanchuma's version of it, they would work for Paro during the day, that's where they had their quota, and then at night and on weekends or whatever, they would work for the individual Egyptians. So maybe they had quotas for Paro, but that's not the whole story. It was really, really bad because Paro made sure that, like, they had quotas for him, and then they had to find time to do the work for the Egyptians that were allowed to grab them. And in this case, yes, maybe the ones who worked for Paro lived in Goshen. But was there chattel slavery? Basically, yes, because any slave that an Egyptian took, a private one, maybe didn't get to live in Goshen and was dragged to live in his house to be, you know, a house slave. So it's still not chattel slavery if you think of it as the, you know, American South, but it's even closer, right? So you basically have three models. It's bad government slavery, state slavery, all the way to the other extreme is Yosef Bechor Shor. It's basically work for the king for a few months a year or something like that. And that explains why it seems to me not so bad. Or no. Basically, imagine the worst possible scenario you can. That's what it was. It was state slavery plus private slavery. How do you deal with the fact that they could move and they own property? That's only the people who happen to work for the government, right? And weren't grabbed by individual, right? Egyptians, so, you know, it's still bad, right? It's really bad. But yes, they own property, but even that is not everybody. Now, of course, on this thing, why were they punished? The Egyptians? Because it was bad. Genocide is indicative of how bad things get. It's still not that much, but it's indicative of how bad things get. It makes it harder to understand Lo Titayev Mitzri, and the like. Okay, but that's basically the summary, right? We have three models, right? Or 2.5 models, I would say. It's really bad, right? The worst model is the one we just saw, which is basically, besides the fact that some people own property, the combination of being forced to work for Paro and forced to work for individuals made it that they own minimal property, they had minimal free time. Maybe some people still lived in Goshen, but not everybody. It was pretty bad. Right? Other extreme, no. They worked for the king a few months a year, and then you got to figure out why they were punished so badly. Right? Or the middle is, no, it was state slavery, but there were limits. Right? It was bad, and that's why they're punished. But at the end of the day, they still own property and the like. Whatever shot you take, I think what's clear, and this is what I already said yesterday, is you need to really be careful when you read the psukim to not impose what we think of as slavery on what they had. Right? And certainly the Midrashim obviously want to read it bad, so they come up with it, right, come up with ways that it was really bad, but there's a lot of work to be done in Pshat to really understand what their slavery was like. I am way over time, and Ginsburg is definitely waiting.